Okay, good morning. So the title of this year is, Was Rivka Really Three? Okay? And it's really more generally going to be about Rivka as a personality, different ideas about Rivka. Going to get a little bit into the other medrash about Yaakov and Esav kicking, running out to try to get to the shul and to the base of Adzara. So the longer title of this year would be, Was Rivka Really Three, and Were Yaakov and Esav Really Running Out to the base of Medrash and base of Adzara? But that was too long of a title, so just went with that. Okay. So I'd like to just begin by acknowledging a number of the ideas which I'm going to say in this year are built upon many ideas I've heard from Rabbi, from the Rosh Yeshiva over many years. And I have a karas hatov for the ideas which he shared with us, and also of all the chumash yurim which Rabbi's given over the years, has really opened up to all of us a real derech to glean insights from the Torah about the Aruch HaChaim, about the lives of the Avos, and it really, he's made the Torah come alive. So instead of just being stories, to being a guide to life. So that's really motivation for a lot of the ideas, and I'll try to quote him certain times, but again, there's a lot of, again, my whole way of looking at Chumash is based upon many shurim I've heard from Rabbi over the years. So, okay, so I'd like to start with the Rashi, with the famous Rashi, which says that Rivka was 3 years old when she married Yitzchak. Okay, so there's a little bit of chesed, teeny bit of the math of the ages or whatever, which is going to be relevant. So it's a little tiny bit complicated, but it's just worth holding on. Okay, not too bad. There are much more complicated Rashi's that do this. So basically the Torah says, Vayhi Yitzchak ben arbaim shana v'kachtos Rivka v'asusol ha'arami v'padan aram, achos lavan harami lolisha. So Yitzchak was 40 years old when he took Rivka. Okay? Okay, so now Rashi gives us a little bit of math. Okay? How does that happen? He says, Harkishabo Avraham Mahar Maria. He says, after the Akedah. Okay, so let's go back for a second. Okay, so there's two parts of the Torah which are relevant here. So at the end of the Akedah, okay, this is where the whole thing gets started. After the Akedah, so right after the Akedah, Vahi Achar Hadvaram Ha'ela, Vayugad Avraham Leimar, Hina Yalda Milka Gamhi Banal Acharchicha. So right after the Akedah, Hashem tells Avraham, or gets a message told to Avraham, that Rivka was born. Okay? So that was right after the Akedah. Okay. And then, what happens right after that is Sarah dies. Okay? So that's the sequence of events. You have the Akedah, Hashem makes it that Avraham is told that Rivka is born, and then you end up having Sarah dying. Okay. So now Rashi says like this. So when Avraham came from Har Moriah, he was told that Rivka was born. And at that time, Yitzchak was 37 years old. So how do you know Yitzchak was 37 years old at that point? He says, because Sarah died right afterwards. Right? And the Torah describes that Sarah died immediately after the Akedah. And Sarah died at 127. Right? Sarah died at 127. When Yitzchak was born, Sarah was 90. So that makes Yitzchak 37 at the Akedah. Right? So Yitzchak was 37. Yitzchak at Akedah, Shemesa Sarah Laman Zayin Shana. Okay, so that's the math. Fine. So Yitzchak was 37 at the Akedah. Sarah died immediately thereafter, as is implied in the Pesukim. And right then, Hashem tells Avraham that Rivka was born. Right? The Rivka was born. So when Avraham was Yitzchak, right after the Akedah was 37, so Rivka was born. And then the Torah tells us, our Pasuk, which says that he was 40 when he took Rivka. So then, turns out, if he was 37 of the Akedah, he was told about Rivka right then, that she was born. So now it turns out she was 3 years old, and that's what he says. Rashi says, Uboba Perak Nolda Rivka, right at that time is when Rivka was born, as the message came to him. Himtin La'ad Shete Ru'i L'Bia, Gimel Shanim. So he waited until she's fit for Bia, which is 3 years old. You know, he had to wait a little bit. Vinasa, and then he married her. Okay. So that's the Rashi. Okay, the famous Rashi that I'm sure we all learned from the time we were very young. Okay? And it's question is it does he really mean that? Is it literal? Does he mean that? That she was really 3 years old? And so the Barbanel brings down, there's questions. She was 3 years old. How was she drawing the water from the well? And feeding all the camels? You could argue, how was she having this whole conversation and all this thing and the chesed? I mean, obviously, I guess she was an advanced three-year-old. But still, an advanced three-year-old, you know, maybe she was almost four or something. But still, you know, when you're three, you know, whatever. But it's still hard to understand. And the Torah tells us about, when Eliezer saw Rivka, it says that she was beautiful, she was a besula, v'ish lo yada'a, right? She was a virgin, she was never with a man. The women of those days were promiscuous, but no, she was at a high level, she was a besula, but I mean, she was 3 years old, of course, right? She's not even right, Labia. So it's just hard to... It's like when you read this Rashi, it's on the one hand, it's hard to believe that she was really 3 years old. On the other hand, Rashi's saying it, and he's not just saying it, he's like doing a whole calculation, right? So there's different types of Rashi. There's a Rashi which you could just see, it says one Rashi, it sounds like a medrash, it sounds somewhat of like a medrash, maybe it's a metaphor teaching you something, and you could try to learn it and explain it away and say, it doesn't mean it literally, he's teaching a certain idea. But the Rashi is, it's interwoven with this whole calculation. So if you're just going to say it's just a mashal for her, she wasn't really three, she was something, whatever. Well, what are you doing with the calculation? He proves it, right? So that's what's challenging, okay? So it's one thing to come up with an idea, but then you have to kind of justify what's Rashi trying to accomplish by giving you this whole story, which seems to be that it's more than just a metaphor. It fits into his whole timeline of these events. Okay? That's the problem. Okay. So, my initial thought to approach this is, I just ignore that second question I just asked, okay? Forget about the whole timeline. Let's just focus on what idea could he be saying if she wasn't three, if she wasn't literally three, then why would he be saying she's three? What idea might it be saying? And let's see what idea we can get with that, and then we'll deal with the timeline and everything else afterwards. But I think that's a decent starting point. Where is he going with that? What's the point? Why say she's three? If she's not three, then why say she's three? What could he possibly be teaching? By the way, there are those who argue. Rabbi Fox sent me, there's a Tosfos Arash who says that works out from the Midrashim, the other Midrashim, I think from the Seder Olam, that she's 14. There's a Ramban I found, Ramban in Yevamos, says she's 14. There's a Medrash says she's 14. 14, I think most of us would have an easier time, maybe not in modern society today, but I think in Torah, 14 isn't so surprising. Okay, to say three is just, it offends any sense of 3 years old, really? But 14 is, so that's what, there are those, not everyone learns that. This is, again, Rashi's going along with one line in the Medrash, and the Ramban shows in there, and Yevamos, there's two trends in the Medrash. Some say she was three, some say she was 14. Fine. So I'm going to go, though, with Rashi. Okay, there's a number of Rashis which I'm going to bring in through this shiur. But my attempt is not to say, there's a lot of people learn differently, but my attempt is to try to elucidate the ideas as understood by Rashi or the Midrashim, which Rashi's citing. I mean, Rashi's generally citing the Midrashim here. I don't know if anything he's saying is on his own. It's all rooted in the Midrashim, but trying to bring out the ideas that are in these Midrashim. Okay. So my first thought was like this, is that what's the point of saying she's three? So the very next Rashi, I think, directs us towards some insight, okay? And again, here's the question I'm saying. What do we learn? Let's say she was three, right? Let's assume for our purposes she wasn't three, she was 14. But then what's Rashi trying to bring out? What idea is different that if she were three? And would Rashi be trying to convey to us by depicting her like a three-year-old if she's not really three? But that's kind of the way I was thinking about it, is that if you really say in truth she was 14 or something older, who knows, then what insight would Rashi be trying to underscore by depicting her as three in a metaphorical way? What concept would it be? What's he teaching us? What's the lesson? Okay, so the very next Rashi, I think, is insightful, because it says, so it gives her whole genealogy, where she's from, her father, her brother, So Rashi says, "V'chi adayin lo nechlev sheipas besual rachos lavan umipadan aram." We already know all these things. He says, "Just say Rivka was born, right?" Or I'm sorry, he took Rivka. What do you have to, you don't have to tell me all the story, all her backstory? We know her backstory, right? Earlier. So Elo lahagid shvacha. It's to teach you her shavach, the praise of her. Shehoisa bas rasha ve'achos rasha umekoma anshe rasha velo lamda mimasehem. That is teaching her shevach, that she was the daughter of a rasha, she was bas besuel, achos rasha, achos lavan harami, umekoma anshe rasha, padan aram, velo lamda mimasehem. And she didn't learn from their actions. Okay? So, the thing is like this. So maybe the idea, which is depicting to us, is that Rivka didn't come from a good place. Okay? She came from a house and a makom of rishis. Right? And when you think of Rivka, you might think of her as somehow being tainted. That she was a tzaddikas, but, you know, after all, how great could you be if you're brought up in a circumstance like that? Right? Everyone around you is Roshan. Right? But that's not true. That's what this Rashi is. This Rashi is telling you it's not true. It's specifically telling you that she didn't learn from the Maisim. She didn't learn from the Maisim. She was totally a tzedekah through and through. And the fact that, in spite of the fact that she was brought up under such circumstances, she really was a full tzedekah. And it could be is that that's part of the idea of depicting her as three. That if Lo Yitzur she wore three, right? Lo Yitzur she wore three when she left the house of her father and her brother and Padan Aram, then that would be very understandable to say, look, she wasn't influenced by them because she was a little kid. She was a toddler when she left the house of her father and her brother and Padan Aram, right? But if she's 14, after all, they brought her up. She became an adult. All of her childhood, all of her formative years were under these terrible examples, right? So the Medrash is saying that she was three is not that she was actually three, but that it's ki'ilu she was three when she left. In other words, she was there for all those years, those 11 or plus years, or whatever it was, but she was lo lamda mimasehem. It's as if she was totally, she grew up, her growing up took place in the house of Yitzhak and under the values of Yitzhak and Avraham. That's really, it's like, that. If she were taken at three, then that's how she would have been raised, under the wings of Yitzhak and under the house of Avraham and under all the ideas of the base of Avraham. So it's as if that happened. In other words, she really was totally moved her. When we think of the aim, when we think of our Imahos, when we think of Rivka, we should not think of her as Rivka, the one who is tainted by Besu'ah Lavan. We should think of Rivka, the wife of Yitzchak, the one who was with Yitzchak basically from her young age. And practically, in fact, she really was in the house of Lavan and Besu'ah and Padan. It's Lomai Lomar. It didn't affect her in the slightest. She basically fully broke free of them, and she had the tzidkus. Ki'ilu, she was 3 years old when she left and she came to the house of Yitzchak. So far, so good?
What do you do with the first Rashi about the judgment about the death for 3 years old?
Good question. Right. This is my methodology here, was ignore that. Because that question is a showstopper. And then you don't even think about it. You know, you don't think anymore because you think it's impossible. There's not how you're going to work it out. He must be saying it's literal, because otherwise how are you going to explain all that? So then you paralyze your mind and you know, can't think anymore. But I said, forget that for now. I'll get to it. Forget that. Just think about this itself. This is an idea. It's a good idea. Unless you have a question on the idea. But this is a good idea. And now we have this idea. What about that? Great question. Maybe we'll have to abandon this idea because it doesn't work out with the other things. But maybe not. Maybe we'll get somewhere with it. Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
You have a proof for your method of thinking.
Okay.
From the way they view Sarah. 127.
Okay.
Right? It's the same idea. In other words, they're using the years to indicate Midas.
Okay. I hear you.
So I'm saying it makes sense.
Okay, good.
I mean, Right. You fall in line in the same.
Right.
And you have a further proof,
yeah,
of the way you say, from the way the blessings are passed on.
Okay.
The Neros, the Easter, and the Anna.
Yeah. So yes. She took over the place of Sarah.
So what you're saying makes good sense insofar as the blessings are concerned and insofar as the Shem are concerned.
Right.
Same idea.
Right. Nice. Great.
You don't mind that little crazy little...
No, no. Good. No, I just have Mark questioning and right. Leslie. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. So now the question is back, the bigger, the harder question. Okay? The harder question. So what about these other, the whole calculation? Right?
The whole calculation.
Ah. So I thought maybe we could try to do is that just like the Torah is depicting... Or it lends itself to this depiction of Rashi's, the Medrash is depicting her as three, in order to convey an idea. Maybe these other parts of the calculation are similarly being depicted by the Medrash in this manner to depict different ideas. And maybe there are multiple ideas which are being conveyed by the Midrashim which present this timeline, which isn't necessarily true to life, but is true to ideas. In other words, I'm suggesting here is that Rivka wasn't truly three, but the idea which you would glean from if she were three is true. And therefore the Medrash is depicting that. And in fact, the Torah never, there's nothing in the Torah that contradicts it. The Torah leaves it open to this interpretation that she was three and this whole timeline. And I'm saying the Torah is doing that and the Midrashim are picking up on that and they're painting a picture and a history which conveys three or four different ideas like this, and they fill out a picture of insight about Rivka, about Yitzchak, about Sarah, about Avram. Different ideas are being conveyed through this particular timeline as it's being arranged. Okay, so let's see. So this whole timeline get started, this calculation? So it seems the basis of the whole thing is that Sarah died right at the Akedah. Okay? Sarah died right at the Akedah. If you take that assumption, which is muchach in the Pesukim, or not muchach, but it's certainly indicated by the Pesukim, because right after what happened to the Akedah, right after the Akedah, Avram was told that Milcah, you know, that Rivka was born, and then Vayichai Sarah. Right? That's the end of Vayera, that whole Akedah, and then there's Chai Sarah. So what happened after the Akedah to Sarah? Nothing. Nothing that we know of. Right, so the Pesukim do lend themselves to that interpretation, and that's what really gets the time started. Because if it really happened right after the Akedah, then Yitzchak was 37 at the Akedah, and if Yitzchak was 37 at the Akedah and married Rivka when he's 40, which is open the Pesukim, well, then it turns out she has to be three, right? So the fact that the Medrash is going with is that that Sarah died right after the Akedah. Okay, so that's a Rashi by. Right in the beginning of Chayisara, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. It says, Vayavo Avram, mi Bereshav, right? Rashi, mi Bereshav, alispo, lisav, lefkosa. Again, Chav Kimel Beis. V'nismecha misa Sarah l'kedas Yitzchak. Why was it Satorah somech Sarah's death l'kedas Yitzchak? V'isha yidei besiros l'kedah. It's through the news of the Akedah, sh'nizdam in b'na l'shchita, that her son was prepared for shchita. U'kema'at shalo nishchat. And she almost was, Parcha nishmasa mimanu mesa. Her spirit went away from her and she passed away. Okay? So the Medrash depicts it that the news of the Akedah is what killed Sarah. Right? And that's why Sarah died, right? Right after that? Okay. So Rabbi had a nice chat about this. Right? Maybe you're familiar, maybe not, but I'll tell you over. So he basically wanted to say, it's funny, what, the news of Akedah that he'd almost died, killing her, how does that happen exactly? Right? It seems extreme. So he basically had this idea that Sarah was for many, many years, was barren, right, until she was 90. And that's very tragic for a woman. After all, she's a woman, and she wants to have kids, and she wants to be involved in continuing Klal Yisrael, not just any, every woman wants to have kids, and she's... Her kids are mean even more to her than the average woman. They're the future of Klal Yisrael and being able to pass on the whole mission of Avram to the world. And it was very painful to her that she wasn't able to have kids. But she dealt with it. She got over it. She mourned it. She suffered and she got over and she accepted the reality of the fact that she doesn't have kids. But then, in fact, then all of a sudden she heard the malachim saying, "Oh, Sarah's going to have a kid," and she laughed. Right? It's like she couldn't accept it. And Rebbe's idea was that it's like because she already mourned it, it's like she couldn't like go there. It's like when a person already mourns for something, it's like the pain of the mourning was so extreme that she couldn't accept even the possibility of that maybe she's going to have a kid. Because don't joke with me. That's like she's already put it behind her and she already had that pain. Like to open up that can of worms again, it would almost like be revisiting the pain of what she suffered. And there was by the Isha Shunamis, or there's a story like that by Eliyahu, basically same thing, is that he offered her to have a kid. He says, "No, al techazeh b'shevchaseh. Don't joke like that. That's not, that's too." And then after when the boy ended up dying, she ended up going back and says, "I told you not to, now I have to mourn him again." So it's like the pain and suffering, which she already overcame, made it that she ended up being closed to the possibility of the fact that she could end up having a kid, which seemingly was a chait, and Avram, you know, put Hashem and Avram took her to task for it, and or at least criticized her for it. Give me 1 second. So, so what happened was that she ended up having a kid. She ended up having a kid, but then when she had Yitzchak, and of course she loved Yitzchak and attached to him so in such a strong way. She had this great attachment to him. After all, after she already gave up hope, she has a son, which she's able to raise. So then, the news that Avram did the Akedah and was about to kill him, and she almost lost him in such a way, was like tragic to her. It was tragic to her. It like she couldn't. It like re-brought up all the pain which she had of not having a son and not having a child, and that itself like it broke her. And according to the Medrash, killed her. That's, if I remember correctly, that was Rebbe's interpretation. Yes.
As long as that happened, Yaakov also. He wouldn't
mourn
his sons when they said that
Yosef. Yes, that's true. But Yaakov Libo Kilo Hamin Lam. Yes, right, exactly. It's true. Right. He already mourned him. He was already crying for him. Don't talk to me like that. Yeah. Okay, good. So now the thing is like this. Now what I'd like to just build on that is to say, yes, Joey. It's like he told him, I mean, she heard basically that he ended up, he was basically an inch away from dying. And that was enough to throw her for a loop. And he didn't die, he was, almost died, but that was, you know, it's one thing if he thought of it, but Mamish got to the scene of that actually happening, of him having the knife ready to shaft him, and about to be killed and not getting killed, was overwhelming for her in a way that it basically broke her. It's funny. The grammar is funny. I don't understand exactly, but I mean, yeah. I mean, basically, she almost basically is about to be killed. You know. Okay. So I want to suggest as follows: is that that's what happened. That's the story the Medrash is depicting. That 37, Yitzchak went for the Akedah, and basically, when Sarah heard about it, she died instantly. But let's say he wasn't 37. Okay. Let's say he wasn't 37. Because the 37 is what makes Rivka 3. But let's say Rivka was 14, and then he was 26, or whatever, right? Or maybe Rivka was older, and then he was less than 37. Whatever the ages are. I don't know what the ages are, but the age, let's say it wasn't the case. So now, and I'm suggesting in truth be told, that wasn't. He wasn't really 37, because then Rivka's 3, and then she's too young. Let's say that's not reasonable. So he was really younger. But what happened to Sarah after the Akedah? So then you'll say, in truth, really Sarah was alive for many years after the Akedah. Well, we don't hear about her. Nothing happens. The Torah was somech right after the Akedah, basically. Sarah dies. The only thing intervening is the one thing about Rivka being born. What happened to Sarah? Why don't we hear any stories about her? So I'd like to suggest is that even if she didn't die, she was kemat, she died. It broke her. It broke her in a way that she wasn't able to continue as Sarah Imenu after that point. So the Medrash is depicting it that it killed her on the spot. But even if it didn't kill her, but it basically, it shattered her. in a way that she wasn't able to function fully anymore. And in a sense, she's like considered like she died. So it's that, again, the Medrash is depicting it that she was, it wouldn't have been that much different, so to speak, if she died, if he was 37 and she died on the spot, or if he was 26 and she died 14 years later. But those were not 14 years of her being Sarai Meir. So the Medrash depicts it that she died instantaneously, because that's basically, it had an effect, ki'ilu that happened. Just like her saying is it's ki'ilu Sarah Rivka was 3 years old, even if she was really older, it's saying it's ki'ilu Sarah died at that point, because it basically prevented her from being able to function in her capacity as Sarah Imeh. Yeah?
Why do you have to let it fall? Because you see with Avraham also, once you start getting into Yitzchak, it says Avraham died at this age, but he didn't die then. He didn't die until way later, because he was around with Yaakov.
Okay.
And you also see with Terach dies.
Okay.
And you say, no, he lived on 20 years, but yet he wasn't related to Avraham anymore. So it says that he died over here.
Right, but the Medrash is saying she died from the Akedah. The Akedah caused her to die. From the news of the Akedah. So I'm saying is, why is the Medrash depicting that the news of the Akedah caused her to die, if it didn't cause her to die? If she died 14 years later. So I'm saying is, well, if you're saying is the Medrash basically ended her life as with the, you know, Sarah Imenu that we know, then it's, you could depict that as if she died. That was her tragic end. She lived longer, but she isn't alive to the world, if you will. Right? Which happens to people, unfortunately, right? People who have Alzheimer's or things like that, like they're alive, but they're not, you know, so I'm not saying she had Alzheimer's, but I'm saying that there's a phenomenon like that where a person is off of their ability to relate to the world in the way that they're able to, and saying something like that happened to her. And the Medrash is depicting it, ki'ilu, she died at that point. Yeah.
Why do you have to say that Rivka was born at the time Avraham heard about her birth?
Yeah, you don't have to say that. That's that's a good question. I know that's the way the Tosfos and the Ramban learn, that's not the case. Yeah, that's a good question. Am I going to explain that?
Smichas
the Parshas. Yeah, no, but it's just saying Smichas that he told him at that point. But it could be he told him that she was born 11 years prior. Just that's when he told it to him. You explain that? I don't remember. Yes, Rashi's definitely saying that. I know, but that's the way, those who argue that she was 14, that's the way to say it. It's not, yes. Correct. I don't know. Yes, but she seems to be the punchline of that line of, according to the Medrash learning. Yeah. Could be, why didn't you tell earlier? It's like telling her now. Could have told him that earlier. Why are you telling him right now? So that's what Rashi's learning, telling him right now, because this is when it happened. Yeah.
But if Yitzchak was still alive, and Sarah was also alive, and until she was broken, if she saw Yitzchak, wouldn't that have somewhat revived her?
No. That's the idea. Psychologically, you can't necessarily undo things like that. It's like, it's not, it broke her in a way that it wasn't able to. I mean, look, I'm sure it was better than that he was dead, but it's like the pain broke her psychologically in a way that she couldn't function in that same way. Yeah.
So then how old was Yaakov at the Akedah?
Yitzchak. Oh, okay, so let me get to that. So that's so younger, let's say. I'm about to get to Yitzchak in the Akedah, okay? So let's talk about the third aspect, okay? So according to, again, Yitzchak at the Akedah, according to this Cheshbon, was 37. Right, and again, that's in order to work out that Sarah dies immediately. But if Sarah dies really 10 years later, 11 years later, 15 years later, 20, you know, like, and Ibn Ezra learns that Yitzchak was 13 at that Kedah. Right? Because Ibn Ezra argues, he says that the Torah builds up how great Avraham was that he did this, passed this Nisayon. Right? But what about 37-year-old Yitzchak? Uvayil Chushneham Yachtav, they both went to that Kedah, isn't that? Why don't we talk about the greatness of Yitzchak that he went to the Akedah, right? So that's why the Ibn Ezra learns that he was 13. And really Avraham kind of forced him or hid it from him or whatever. That's what Ibn Ezra learns. But Rashi doesn't depict him as that. Rashi depicts him that he was 37, right? So that's another part of this picture, right? Is that he's 37 in the Akedah. So again, I'd like to suggest that that's another part of the puzzle, which is that That also, let's assume Yitzhak really, Yitzhak was not 37 the Akedah. Let's say he was 13. So then you'd look at the Akedah, which is, I guess, the way the Ibn Ezra looks at it, as basically was Yitzhak was not really a part of the Akedah, in a sense. He was the object of the Akedah. But Yitzhak, as a personality, didn't really grow. He wasn't an adult. He wasn't the bocher in the Akedah. He just kind of went along for the ride. He was taken along for Avraham's Nisayim. But it could be that the Medrash is not depicting it that way. According to the way Rashi is learning, and the Medrash is learning, is Yitzhak was involved in the Akedah as a Gavra, not just as a Chafetz. He was really, as the Pesukim say, he was like an Ola Tamima. That the experience of the Akedah on Yitzhak, of being Moser his Nefesh, Hashem Shemayim, for the Tzivu Hashem, was something which impacted him greatly. He basically gave up his life, L'Kiddush Hashem, and then he was alive. And that decision and that experience impacted him in a way for the rest of his life. And because he's an Ola Tamima, Rashi says he couldn't leave Eretz Yisrael, and he couldn't marry a Shifcha. He was a different type of a person. A person who gives up their life, the Kiddush Hashem, in that type of a way, it moved him and it impacted him in a positive way. You know, I'm saying in a positive way, not just... See, if it's done to a kid who's 13, that's like trauma. That's like a trauma. See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, in truth, let's say he was younger. But it does, see, if the Torah would depict it to you that he was 13 years old, you'd say he was impacted in a traumatic way. He was a kid and he was afflicted and forced, like kind of the way the Ibn Ezra depicts it. So he's like forced by his father to do this. That harms a person. You don't grow from that. That's painful and suffer. You know, it's like a traumatic type of an experience. But the way the Medrash is depicted, the Medrash doesn't want you to think of it that way. It's not the way to think about Yitzhak and the impact of the Yitzhak, the Akedah on Yitzhak. Not that the Akedah hurt him, but the Akedah was an opportunity for him to rise up to a new level of an Ola Tamima. To be Moser as Nefesh, Al-Kiddush Hashem, based on the Tzivoy Hashem, and to be willing to do that, Vayichlu Shneihem Yachdav, Yitzhak and Avraham together, that is the way Rashi is depicting, the Medrash is depicting, the impact that Akedah had on Yitzhak. It was a great Bechira for Yitzhak, and it was a great growth experience for Yitzhak, in a way that we should think of him as someone who is actively engaged in the Akedah. And if you think of him as being young, then you miss that point. So whatever age he actually was, even if he were 13, he was an advanced 13, and there are different types of 13-year-olds. He was a 13-year-old who was engaged and grew from it. And then the Medrash depicts him as being a grown man, because according to the Medrash, he was ki'ilu, he was a grown man. Whether he actually was or he wasn't, it's ki'ilu, he was a grown man, because the experience of the Akedah impacted him in a way which moved him and caused him to grow as through this experience of being an Ola Tamima. So I'm saying is that in all three of these cases, through the timeline which the Medrash depicts, you're depicting Rivka. It's not actually. I'm saying in actuality, Rivka was really older, and in actuality, Sarah died years after the Akedah, and in actuality, Yitzhak was much younger at the Akedah. But the idea that but if you depicted that actual history, you'd be led to interpret the ideas to take from it, you'd miss the ideas to take from it. Because even though Sarah Rivka was older, let's say 13, she really was Ki'ilu. Don't think of her as a 14-year-old being raised in a house of Rishos. She was Ki'ilu, she was 3 years old when she left. And even though Sarah lived for many years after the Akedah, don't think of her as living. She didn't really live after the Akedah. That's not, ideationally, she didn't live after the Akedah. And even though Yitzhak was really little, young at the Akedah, don't think of him as being young at the Akedah. He wasn't young. He was old at the Akedah. He was mature at the Akedah, and he was moved as an adult in the Akedah. Okay? So that's what I'm saying. It's like the Medrash is... It's based on the lead of the Pesukim, which is depicting it in this way. It basically lends itself to this interpretation about how Sarah dies right afterwards and the ages which the Torah does give us. The Torah doesn't tell us the real age. It leaves it that it's open to this type of this midrashic interpretation. And the Medrash is conveying this timeline in order to bring out these different ideas, which are true ideas, whether or not the timeline matches the actual ages of the Medrash. But the ideas are true, and the way to convey these ideas to people is depicting it as ages, which your mind naturally sees those ideas. Even though at the true ages, you'd miss the points. You relate to it differently. Okay? Yeah. Done.
Regardless of the age of your talk.
Yes.
Sorry, handle the news of your data connect to the Latin. Was that a punishment?
Was that a punishment? Yeah, that's a good point. Yes, I was talking about that earlier. It doesn't tell us. Was there any punishment for Sarah? It's like she's scolded for it, but then was she punished? Is there an onesh? So I don't remember if Rebbe had said this or not, but according to this way of learning, I think you say is that her punishment was a natural punishment. It's because she wasn't able to fully consider the nes and that she would have a kid. She was like off in her relationship to Yitzchak. And that ended up naturally causing her early demise or early inability to cope with the news of the Akedah. So it was like an onesh in a natural way. It was a natural consequence of her inability to fully integrate the idea of Yitzchak being born and, you know. So yeah, in that sense, it was an onesh. Right? Yeah.
So the maturity and the growth of Yitzchak and Akedah is indicated by the Rashi that says, bind my hands so that I don't ruin the shmita?
Oh, I guess so. Is that a Rashi?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, right. That and also Ve'echlu Shneim Yachdav. They both, in Rashi there says that they both went up willingly. Even though he knew about it, they both went up willingly. And the fact that he was 37, he was an adult, at least in the Medrash. Right? So the Medrash wants you to look at the Akedah. At least the Midrash and Rashi is breaking as Yitzchak being engaged and being bocher to go through this experience. And that's the way we have to think of Yitzchak going forward, as someone who willingly probably went through that Akedah, not a 13-year-old who was forced by his father to go through that. Yeah, all right?
It's a hard question to answer, but Sukkim kind of, like, I'm going to tell him the story. He doesn't say, Hashem told me, you're going to have to be sacrificed. He says, Hashem, you're in a way, you know, there's something
that was
hidden from him, or I don't even think it was appropriate to tell.
Yeah, okay. Good question. Let's study that kid. I mean, it's a good question, but I don't think that's a stam question, right?
What's the question?
Why didn't Avin tell him earlier?
Well, I think it speaks to that maybe...
Oh, if he was three, if he was young. That's Ibn Ezra's support. You mean that's why he hid it from him, because he thought he'd run away. That's Ibn Ezra's
support. Yeah, like, I mean, it also detracts from how great of an impact
that it would have on Yitzchak. Yeah.
I mean, if...
Well, that's what Rashi says, is when he did tell him, Vayechol Shneim Yachtav, it means even though he realized that they were going, he went willingly. You don't believe Shalim? Yeah, that's what Rashi says. It's Rashi Lekeda, he told him. Oh, yeah, Lo Labini. Right. Lo Labini, and then he went anyways. Yeah, let me see that. That's where he says... a second. Here it says... it says, yeah. So Rashi says, Avram sheyodeh sholich lishkodos b'no hayolich brotzim v'simcha ki yitzchak sholay marich v'davar. Oh no, not that one. Yira lo hasa. Kiloma yira v'yivcha lo hasa. V'im ein sa le'ola b'ni. Even though Yitzchak understood, so that's what he told him. I mean, he told him. I mean, according to the Medrash, he told him. In the Medrash, he told him. I mean, he understood it. Again, the Medrash is telling you he told him. The Pasuk isn't saying that, but that's what the Medrash is filling in. And that's what I'm saying. The Medrash is showing you the way to think about the Pshat. The Pshat could be interpreted in different ways. And there's a way to interpret it. And the Medrash is filling in the way to interpret the story. Stories could be interpreted in different ways. But the Medrash is depicting the stories in manners, which it may not be factually true of what actually happened, but is in line with the ideational content of the stories and the lessons to derive from the stories. Yeah.
He only told him on the way up.
Yeah.
Not before.
No. But fine.
Because he asked where is the
Yeah. Yes. Correct.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, but he told him on the way out, and he still went. When he found out, he went. Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. Why did he tell him earlier? I don't know. He didn't tell him earlier. I don't know. But whatever. He told him before, and then he went. So that experience is, you know, Hashem didn't tell him. Maybe he didn't. Hashem didn't tell Yitzchak. Maybe he derived. If Hashem didn't tell him, then I don't have to tell him until it becomes necessary. But when he did tell him, then he ended up fully accepting it, and he went. Yeah. Yes, Shalom.
Was it in the second
Yes. No, I don't know. It's a good question. And that's Ibn Ezra's argument. Why doesn't it depict it that way? Why, if it's an Isayon for Yitzchak, why doesn't the Torah praise Yitzchak for it? I don't know. Good question. Good question.
Well, it seems like there's a Russian way that says that he didn't see Yitzchak because Malach, whatever, the Medish's Malach, by crying on.
Oh, right, the eyes.
Malach, and therefore,
yeah, okay.
And yet they benefit.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It's talking about Avram's the one who's acting, and that's the one Torah is saying, is he's the one who's doing it. I don't know if the Torah has to now also say, it's in the context of the Pesukim, I don't know if that's necessary. I mean, that's, it's a Ibn-Ezra's question, but it's not a knockout question. What? So I have Rashi, yeah. Yeah, okay, so one other, before I move on, there's a problem, but yeah.
That's your question about Rivka?
Yeah.
So if she, it's a Vegas.
Yeah.
In her house.
Yeah.
Then a vote is ours.
Yeah.
So I understand the impressive part, but so it seems like she was able to come to a realization about a Kodesh Baruch Hu just like Avram?
In some sense. She was a Tzaddikas. I'm not sure. You know, it's a good question how much of a Tzaddikas she was and what was she. We know that her class said. I don't know. It's a subject of research. I'm not sure. Good question. Yeah.
Just going back to the last discussion, I just recently heard a shiur that was explaining the third expression of Rashi is not going to really talk about the greatness of like the people. It's not like this isn't Rashi is not about hero worship and like the greatness of the people per se is their activities insofar as the foundational events for Klal Yisrael and Hashkafa. So I assume Avraham's activity was more, you know, Avraham's involvement was more
right.
related to the foundational events of Klal Yisrael. Yes, right. The Torah was amazing and
right.
should be praised, but
right.
that's not what the Torah is focused on.
Right.
It's not about hero worship and the greatest
right.
people.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good. Good. So who's. You hear that? Okay, good. Okay, good. Should I do that? No. Okay. So there's another point, which I'm going to leave out, but there's another Rashi, which has to do with the news that Avraham got, that Rivka was born, which I think also fits into this, but it's more complicated. So let's leave that alone for now. Okay? We'll see maybe this time at the end. Yeah, okay. So there's a problem on this chat, okay? Let's go back to Rivka. Okay, so let's go back to Rivka. So you could ask a question, and I thought of this question, just I had that idea. Rivka, we're saying, is that she really was older, but in the Medrash, she was younger. She was 3. Because in the Medrash, like it says in other Rashi, she was totally unaffected by the house of, by her father and her brother and her place, right? But there's a Rashi which says like this. So where's the Rashi? It's, okay. Yeah, 25-29. Chav hei chav aleph. Okay? So, chav hei chav aleph. So, you know the Rashi I'm referring to?
Yeah, Rosh.
Right. Okay, good. So it says that she was a barren, and she davened, and Yitzchak davened, right? Vayatar Yitzchak l'Hashem l'nocha l'shtoki ha-karahu, vayasar lo Hashem ata Rivka ishto. So it says, Rashi, Lenochach Ishto, Zoe Omer Bizavizu, Mispal Vizu, Mathis Bizavizu, Mispal, they're both davening on opposite side corners of the room. By Yelser, Lo, Lo Velola. Listen to her, to him, and not to her. She'eno Doma Tvila Sadik Ben Rasha, Le Tvila Sadik Ben Sadik. Because the Tvila of a Sadik Ben Rasha, Rivka, is not as great as the Tvila of a Sadik Ben Sadik, Rivka of Yitzchak, son of Avram. The Fikach, Lo Velola. And that's why he answered him and not her. So on the surface, this is a question on our interpretation. Because the whole idea is saying that, like, what's the idea of a tzaddik ben Rasha? On the surface, you'd think because a tzaddik ben Rasha is not as big of a tzaddik. Because why should my tefillah be less? Why should a person's tefillah be less? Because their parents happen to be a rasha. Why should that affect their tefillah? But on the surface, you would have interpreted, because there's a limit to how great a person's going to be if they're a ben rasha. And it's Avi ben Sadek, who's brought up on the in the house of Avram and Sarah, is going to peak to a much greater level of tzidkus than someone who's brought up in the house of Lavan and Besuel and Padan Aram. And therefore, the tefillah is not as high as a level. Right? But the whole idea we're saying is, no, she was 3 years old. She left the house before it really impacted her. She was not impacted at all by, even though her place was Rasham, her father was Rasham, her brother was Rasha, it didn't impact her at all. So then why is she any less than a Tzadik Ben Tzadik? Right? Fair question? Okay. So, when I realized that question, I kind of left it alone. Okay? It's not, you have to appreciate the kind of question it is. It's a question. I don't think it's a knockout question. It's because, like, why is the tefillah greater? I don't know. There are a lot of the ideas in tefillah. Maybe it's the Zechus Avos is greater. Maybe because her father is a tzaddik. It's a kasha if you interpret tzaddik ben rasha because you're not as big of a tzaddik, then it's a kasha. But there's other ways to interpret it. That's not necessarily what it means. Maybe it's because the zechus of Avraham Avinu is also part of the tefillah, and then it's not a kasha, right? So it's not. It's only a kasha on that plain, maybe the simplest interpretation of that rashi. But that's not a knockout kasha. It's not a tiyufta. This is the kasha, okay? So maybe there's another way to interpret that rashi. Okay. So I left the kasha alone. And then I was considering a different part of the parsha. Okay, so let's go somewhere else. Okay, and maybe, turns out, maybe we'll come back to this. Okay? So, the strange rashi also, very soon after, in the this week's parsha also.
What can you say
is on the one hand you're saying she didn't learn... Right. Was she or was she not? But now she's saying it's a tzaddik ben rasha. Sounds like she was affected by her father. Why does her tefillah any less? If she really wasn't impacted in any way, so why is she any less? Because she's a tzaddik ben rasha. Who cares if she's a tzaddik ben rasha? She's as if she was brought up by Yitzchak. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So basically, she gets pregnant. I told her, Im Kain, Lama Zeh Anochi. Right? So the kids were fighting in her, right? Or fighting, crushing, pushing, running, different shatim, right? And she said, Im Kain, if so, Lama Zeh Anochi. Why was I davening for becoming pregnant? As Rashi interprets, Avateach Lidrosat Hashem. And she went to seek advice from Vidoresh Hashem, as Rashi says, she went to base Medrash Shoshal Shem, to seek advice from the Navi, right? Literally, Hashem, she argued on Matei B'Sofa, and sure enough, by Yomar Hashem La, Hashem told her, Rashi says through a shliach, through Ruach Hakodesh, that Shnei Goyim Bevitneich, Shnei Lumim Miachi Parei, Du Lom Elom Yamat Ravi Avot Zayir. So you got two nations in your womb, and two again great nations are going to be separated from your insides. And they're gonna one nation is gonna be fighting against the other one, or strong one nation was stronger than the other one. Ravi Avot Zayir, the younger one will serve the older one. Okay, fine. So the famous nevuah, right? So so Rashi also famously says, "Vayisrotetu al karcha hamikra hazeh omer dersheni." Against you all, the pasuk says, "Vidoresh me," right? What is this ritzitza? It doesn't tell us. It just says there was a ritzitza going on in her innards. The cause of Imkein Lamazan Anochi, what's that talking about? So Rabbi Sinu Darshu says two pshatim that he brings down. One is ritzah, running. When she passed by the base madras of Shem Ve'ever, Yaakov was running, trying to run to get out. So Vayisrotzim means they were running, right? In utero, running out of the womb when she passed by the, Davar Acher, Misrotzim Zeh Mzeh, they're fighting, they're pressing. I think that's what he said. Misrotzim is they were like fighting with each other, and may Rivim and Nachla Shnei Olamos, fighting about the Nachla of these two worlds. So is it from the Lashon of of Rut, that they were running out or that they were fighting. Fighting for the Nachal of Shnei Olamos. So the question is again, a similar type of a question, is are we to believe that little Yaakov and Esav were, you know, had x-ray vision and saw the Beis Medrash Shem Ve'Ever and were running out to try to get out to the Beis Medrash or the Beis Avodah Zarah? Right? I don't think so. Right? So what then?
They heard the call Torah.
Heard the call Torah.
And then
yeah. 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 Okay? That's one shot. I'd like to suggest something different. Okay. So, and the other pshat, what's the other pshat? They were fighting about the Nachlo Shnei Olamos. What's that? Is that also, that's also hard to believe. I mean, they're similar, or whatever, but what's the, what are the two pshatim? Right? Okay. So the thing is like this. Let's put Rashi aside for a moment. The Medrash, as I interpret it, is trying to bring out psukim, ideas in the psukim, to elaborate on ideas which are in the psukim. So let's ignore the Medrash for the time being. What's the pshat in the psukim? Okay? What's the pshat in the psukim? What happened here? So, even forgetting about the running out of the base Medrash, and how would you interpret without the Rashi? Right? The plainest interpretation. So I think the plainest interpretation is she had some sort of pains in her stomach, in her womb, which were abnormal, right? Strangely abnormal. And she couldn't understand it. And she's saying, what's up? What's going on here? And I think I couldn't find it, but there's a Rashi, right? She says that she asked people, and no one knew what it was. It's not normal. This is not a normal type of a thing. Totally abnormal. And so abnormal, presumably she asked people, doctors, midwives, whatever, and no one had an answer. It was something intense. So much so that she went to ask the Navi. She consulted the Navi. After all, she knew she was barren and she became pregnant because of her tefillos. So it's a reasonable thing to do, is to turn to a Navi and to ask him for advice. But she's only going to go to the Navi if she has something totally abnormal. Right? If it's just normal, you know, pregnancy pains of whatever, that's not going to cause her to go to the Navi. Right? So she must have had something abnormal. And so how'd that happen? So I think the plain shot is it was some sort of an ace or hashgacha. Right? I mean, it's not just a coincidence. I mean, the whole point is Hashem wanted to give her this message, the tenevuah, through Shem, the Ruach HaKodesh, Roshnei Gaim Vinech. That was important for her to know. Why was that important for her to know?
Brachos.
Okay, so she had to know, at the very least, she had to know the brachos. She had to know that Esav was going to be a Rasha and Yaakov was going to be a Tzadik, and she had to know to set up this whole plan that they're not going to work together. Yitzchak had a plan, and this is Rebbe developed a beautiful shiurim about, is that Yitzchak had a plan that they would work together, and they'd form one nation, and Yaakov would be the Kol Torah, and Esav would be the Adai Midei Esav. And he would be the supply, the monetary success, and the security, and Yaakov would be in the Beis Medrash. And that was his plan. But she...
And that worked for
Yitzchak and Zvulun. But she knew that wasn't the case. How'd she know? Ultimately, she knew because of the Nevuah. She knew early on that was not to happen. Esau wasn't able to trick her, but maybe not because she was so smart, but she had a Nevuah early on to instruct her about the nature of these kids and how things are going to unfold. Right? So it was important to have her receive this Nevuah early on. And arguably, it wasn't just that she had to know how to act that fateful day by the brachos, but throughout the raising of these children, she had to know how to bring them up. The information that there was a Yaakov and an Esav in her, and that she had to raise a Yaakov and avoid the harm of the Esav and be able to be the mother who's going to enable Klal Yisrael to emerge, was something which is not just one decision you make about the brachos. That's part of how she has to raise them in an intelligent way with his knowledge. And the Nevuah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make it, to give her this message so that she would learn how to raise her children, to raise them in line with really being able to bring about Yaakov and to bring about the brachos and to bring about Klal Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make it known to her. But the way that he made it known to her was through her going to the Shem, right? Going to the Beis Medrash.
So
So how did he do so? Just again, forgetting about the Rashi for the time being, but he did so through giving her abnormal labor, pains, pregnancy pains. And as such, that would cause her to go to the Navi. And the Navi gives her the message. And then she knows it. And she's informed. Right? That's, I think, plain interpretation of the psyche. Yeah?
Why would you go to the Navi?
She already went to the doctors, and they didn't have anything to tell her. There's a Rashi who says that she went to Medr says that she. Well, the woman said it was abnormal, but is it Rashi? I don't know, I couldn't find it. But it's presumably she did. She went to other people, but no one knew what it was. So and she goes to Navi, why should I? Well, she, after all, she only has this kid because she davened and because of her tefillos, and she was barren. It was clearly some sort of an ace that she had the kid. She was barren for 20 years. She wasn't having a kid, and then she davened and she had the kid, and now she davened for it. It was a result of her tefillah, and now she's something's crazy, which she's saying. She even says like, "I'd rather it's not worth it. So painful. The pain was so intense." What's she supposed to do? So she's turning to an Avi, looking for maybe there's some sort of message that Hashem's giving me. That's a normal thing to do, especially if you're someone who's living under the Hashgacha in that type of a way. So she goes to the Navi and gets this advice. But again, the pshat is that the pain, Hashem was sending her a message and sending her to the Navi, basically. Indirectly, through giving her this pain, sending her to the Navi to give her the message. Okay. Fine. So, but I'd like to suggest is that it's not... See, getting wisdom from a Navi is not the same thing as like reading a crystal ball. It's not that you just tell her this piece of information, and now she knows it, and now she's going to do whatever she has to do. See, but rather, Nevuah is a limud. Nevuah is teaching, educating Rivka, teaching her about the plan of the Hashgacha, trying to give her insight into what the Hashgacha has in store. And as such, when you're teaching somebody, it's not, you can't just give them information. It's like you want to just give a shir and just say all the svaras in a second. It's not, it doesn't work. The person doesn't gain the most when you just tell them all the ideas. A person has to think on their own. And Rivka, to make the appropriate decisions, how many decisions did Rivka have to make to raise Yaakov and Esav properly? Hundreds, thousands. She's their mother. She has to bring them up to get to this point of the brachos years and years later. So there, she has to, the nevuah is designed not just to give her a fact, but to cause her to engage her mind in trying to understand the plan of the Hashgacha in terms of learning what is the plan and how does she fit into it. And in doing so, I'd like to suggest is that it wasn't only through the nevuah. If you look at the Nevuah, for example, the Nevuah is not very descriptive. It's not very enlightening. I mean, we know what it means, sort of, and I think we put meaning into it. But it's kind of vague, as Nevuahs often are, right? Shnei gayim v'venech, shnei lumi mechli paredu, v'lo'om milom yamaz ravi avot zoyer. Two nations are in your womb, two regimes from your inside shall be separated, one regime shall be strong from the other, and the elder shall serve the younger. Okay? What do I do now? Right? It's not that informative. So again, we know what it means. Oh, it's telling her that there's me Yaakov, there's me Esav, and the whole story and all that, and we know that. But that, does she know that? Is that clearly the interpretation? Does it even say that Esav's going to be a Rasha? There are going to be two nations. Okay, one's going to be stronger than the other. Okay, maybe there are going to be two nations, and they're going to work together. Or they're going to fight. Or they're going to fight. Maybe they're going to be like Yosef and his brothers. Maybe they're going to be fighting with each other. And they're going to have a lot of anger, but they're all tzaddikim. That doesn't mean that there's going to be a tzaddik and a rasha. Well, that's important for her, isn't that? It's important for her to know the nature of these two nations are two nations which are never, ever going to get along because they're opposites. And that one of them is going towards the base of Medrash, and one of them is going towards the base of Avodah Zarah. And that she has to, there's no way whatsoever to work out a plan that like Yitzchak is trying to do, is to work, to make them work together, but that she had to know that this is not happening. They're far apart. And they're two nations which are going to be fighting over Nachan She'olamos. And they're in Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, it's irreconcilable conflict. And one of them is going towards the base of Adzar, and one's going towards the base of Medrash. So she had to gain that information, but that information is not in the Nevuah. That information is not in the Nevuah. The Nevuah doesn't say that, or I don't think reference it. Maybe you could be Dorish it, but it's not really there. Yes. Yes.
Did she share the Nevuah with her?
No. Doesn't seem so. Okay. Good question. So let's what?
Yeah, David asked the question, why she did, you know, did she share?
Okay, good question. Good question. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later, okay? Good question. I think Rebbe talked about that, but let's leave that alone for now, okay? So the thing is like this. So how did she gain this information? How did she get the full picture? So I'm saying Hashem didn't give her the full picture on a silver platter. Hashem gave her various pieces of information that she had to use her chachma to analyze, to put it together, to build a model of what's going on here. And by doing so, by using her mind to figure this out, she becomes a chachama in the area of the plan of the Hashgacha of Yaakov and Esav and what the Hashgacha is going for. In a way that enables her to make intelligent decisions on a day-to-day basis. In a way that would not happen if you just tell her what's going to happen. If you just read her crystal ball fortune, it's not going to, you know, enable her to be intelligent. You have to teach her in a way where she figures it out. Where you give her enough information to put the pieces together and to build a model of what Hashem is teaching her. Hashem's melamed her through various clues. So what are the clues? So at least I see three different messages which are given to her. Maybe there's more. Okay. First of all, there's the Nevuah. That's one thing. But then also I'd like to suggest is that the experience of the pain which she was suffering was also designed to teach her. Now, it didn't teach her at the moment. At the moment, it was just mysterious to her. She had this pain, and she didn't know how to interpret it. But after the fact, she reflected back and was able to incorporate these as new, the pain, the nature of the pain, the timing of the pain, as data points which would help her build a model of what's going on, what Hashem trying to convey to her. So the two pshatim in Rashi. So let's start with the second shot, which is a little easier, which is that the two, they were fighting over Nachnashe Olamos, which I'm saying indicates that the nature of the pain which she had, I don't know exactly how she experienced this, but it was like a fight, it was like a war. There was a battle going on in her. They were fighting over Nachnashe Olamos. It wasn't just pain, but as if there was like a battle going on. And that was what she experienced. That was what, again, my point is that even in the pshat of the psukim, there was an ace, a hashgacha, happening to give her this pain. So that's causing her to go to the Navi. Without the medrash, that's the case. That's why she's going to the Navi. That's from Hashem. It's not just a natural coincidence. She happens to have unbelievable pain. It's from the hashgacha. So I'm saying is the hashgacha didn't... the normal way you'd learn is the pain was to get her to go to the Navi. And it was entirely a trigger to get her to the Navi, and the Navi told her everything she needed to know. I'm saying is, no, the pain itself was also part of what was giving her information. The quality and the nature of the pain was part of what was giving her information. The pain was one where they were fighting in like an intense way. And according to the second shot, that's part of what she had to look back on and understand the pain was conveying to her that they were, it's like in Yaakov, were fighting over Nachnashe Olamos. There's an irreconcilable battle going on between them. Don't try to reconcile them. They're fighting from the womb. They're fighting. Like sometimes people say that about kids or whatever. They've been the twins. They fight from the womb. They were literally fighting from the womb, which means it was conveying to her, she had to interpret it, that basically this is not something you're going to be able to resolve peacefully like Yitzchak was trying to do, but on the contrary, you're going to have to resolve. They're going to fight. Someone's going to win. It's your job to make sure the right one wins. And then she says, Rav Yavod Tzoyer, she had to do that. But that's part of what was the message which was being conveyed to her. Yeah. The first pshat is harder, a little harder to understand, but I'd like to suggest is that it means that, literally, the timing of her kicking, of the kicking, whatever it was corresponded to when she went to a base of Zara or she went to a Yeshiva Shem Ever. Okay? That's when she didn't just experience the pain 24/7. She experienced the pain. It was correlated with certain experiences which she had. And arguably, you could say that was just a total nace. It's the total nes that Hashem gave her at those moments. Or you could argue that the way the Hashgacha operated was through some hormonal imbalance, or I don't know how these things work, but it impacted her in a way that when she experienced intense emotional emotions, it triggered the babies that got aroused or whatever. And after all, she was a big tzaddikas, and when she would go to a base of Odizara, she was angry and it would bother her. And when she went to base of Shem Ever, she was very excited and she saw the continuation of the Derech Hashem in the world. So that the pain which she suffered was corresponded to both the base of Odizara. That's what it's saying. It's like Yaakov was running out to the base of Medrash, and Esav was running to the base of Odizara, which she subsequently interpreted it that the children, the Shnei Goyim Bevitnech, were not just Shnei Goyim, but there was a guy who was running to the base of Odizara, and there was another guy who was running towards the base of Knesset. And that was part of what she had to know, part of what the Hashgacha was teaching her through this pain. So the both Pshatim are filling an additional piece of information which was teaching her. The first Pshat, namely the nature of the two kids, Odizara and Torah. The second Pshat is teaching her about the irreconcilable battle that they're going to have. Both in the same vein, but slightly different nuances. Yeah.
I don't think you're saying this, but I'm wondering why. That in fact, maybe because she got this pain when she was by the Shiva or when she was by the Lutera, and that's why she worked with another.
Yeah, you could say that. I have no problem with that. I don't see that as being necessary, because it depends how much Gersh's question bothers you. If the question is why in the world would you go to an Avi, then maybe they'll have to say it's something like that. That it was that what triggered her off. You could say that. You could say that also, but I'm saying it's more than that. That's part of it. But then also she reflected back and realized there was a message. It wasn't just Hashem just setting an alarm in her. Yeah, just an alarm, push her to the Navi. Just put it, there are other ways to push her to the Navi. The nature of the communication was also giving her insight. Yeah, Mati.
Yeah, outside the Pashat Shad, the second, what exactly is the second shot? Like, the Nagu itself seems to imply that there's going to be a battle going on between them.
Yeah, but there's battles and there's battles. Like, there's a battle between Yosef and his brothers, but that battle was resolved. But the battle between Yaakov and Esau was fighting over Shnei Olamos. It's an irreconcilable battle which is going to continue Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. There's no way to resolve it. And she had to know that. See, Yitzchak made, even if she could have known like what Yitzchak knew and try to resolve the battle, which Yaakov did for Yosef and the brothers and ended up happening. She had to know that this was a battle which there was no solution. All the way, what? Oh. Well, it doesn't do it. It causes her to think into. It's causing her to give her more information than she already knows from the Nevuah. So it's saying is the pain was a persistent fight. There was a fight that was ongoing, and that's the way she interpreted it. I don't know exactly how she interpreted it and what's the process, but she thought into the area and what information is being given to her, and that's the way she's interpreting it.
Once we're saying that it's some form of Shafa, be it for natural means or for right. So why not just stick with the Shama Medrash and say that, you know, Yaakov would start kicking by his Medrash either because he ran and started kicking that because of some natural process?
Right. I'd say based on the Ramban's principle that you minimize the nes. In general, you interpret, he says that Hashem does things by minimizing nisim. In general, he minimizes Nisim. So Hashem could have done a miracle and made a little tiny tugboat and fit Noach and his kids and everyone into the Teva. But he minimizes the Nes and he made a very, very big boat because it's the Derech Hashem when he does miracles to minimize miracles. So to take a miracle and to take a fetus and give him knowledge and eyesight out the thing and whatever seems to me a bigger miracle than causing her to have a hormonal imbalance which is going to be triggered at specific times. But you could say that. You could say it. It's just that from my interpretation based on the Rishonim and Chazal is that in general it's the Derech Hashem to minimize, to breach the laws of nature as minimal as possible. So that's a much less breach, the way I see it. Yeah, David.
That's the next Machlokas.
The next Machlokas.
Okay,
yes. Oh, yeah, that, then they seemed like they were friends, right?
Yeah, they were friends, but it seems like Rebbe explained that They were given the
Yetzers
in the womb.
They were given the
Yetzers
in the womb.
Did I cancel the
Oh. But still, they have to see it. I mean, that's what's so hard to see. It, just to say that again, you have to say they're given their yetzers, and they're given knowledge, and they're given eyesight, and they're like the whole thing. It's just, yeah, you make, it's like a whole, as opposed to just saying there's working on her, and then you're giving them. For, here's another problem. There's another problem. It's like it says, there's another Rashi. This is another, I forgot to mention this, but there's another kasha on that interpretation. It says, Rashi says, so Rashi says that means until they were gadolim, no one knew their nature. No one cared. They were different, they were whatever, but no one cared. When they were gadolim, then zeholech this way and zeholech that way. So it implies, it's like different kids have different natures, but that's not tzidkas and rishos. That's just different natures. It's when they became gadolim, that's when so even I want to say, look, they were miraculous kids, and they were you know, Yaakov was a big tzaddik when he was even in the fetus, and, you know, in the womb. But that the Rashi is treating them like normal people, and only when they became gedolim were they really bocher to be a tzaddik and to be a rasha. So to make them having that knowledge in utero, and to make them in that, it just seems like it's possible, but you know, certainly within HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ability, but not the line with the way it seems that he operates. Yeah. All right. So. Well, they're pressing out, pressing and fighting. Let's just running. Now you see that shot is like they were running out. They were running. Right. It's like as if they were running out to get to the base medrash, and as if they're running to get to the. It was like conveying to our Derech Mashal that the kids who you're going to have are going to be running in opposite directions.
Right. So I'm asking, like, if there's something about this personality that made her fit for the challenge. Like, if you don't have when she received the gift from
Eliezer. Right.
She ran to her mother. She's always
right.
Flushing,
yeah.
Really
yeah. Good question. Good question. Yeah, I'll take. There's different ways you could go with that question, but I'll go one way with it, but in a little bit. Okay? It's an open ended question, but yeah, interesting thing to ponder. I have something to add to it, but we'll get there. Okay? Okay, so just another piece of information, another piece of the puzzle, I believe, is that when the birth itself was strange, miraculous, if you will, but when they came out, Yaakov was holding Esau's heel. Right? That's odd. Right? That's odd. So Rashi says, Shamati Medrash Agada. He says, he basically says like this. Rashi says he heard an Agada, that he was holding onto his heel to prevent him from coming out. Because Yaakov was really created from the first drop of Zerah, and Esav was created from the second. Right? And take a look. If you have a tube, and you put two balls into a tube with one opening, okay, and you put in two balls into the tube. So, first in, last out. Right? The ball which you put in second comes out first. So, Esav was the tube, I guess, is the birth canal. Right? So, what it's saying is, even though Esav was coming out first, but yeah, he's coming out first. Of course he comes out first, because he was created second. So, what it's saying is, So to Esau, it turns out, since Esau was being born first, he must have been created last. And Yaakov, who was coming out last, was created first. So Yaakov was trying to prevent Esau from getting out, so that the one who was born, was created first, would also be the one who was born first. Okay? And this way, he would be able to get, you know, to the finish line first. And then he would be able to take the Bechorah of Adin. Right? You know, you're familiar with this, Rashi, right?
Are you understanding the pasuk literally?
Yes.
And he was holding on to his
heel? Yes.
Holding
on. Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing that literally. Okay. Does anyone not? I don't know. I haven't really done research, but I mean, it sounds like it's literal. Yes.
Sounds a little...
Yeah, oh, it's an ace. It's an ace. So, yeah, I'm interpreting that it's an ace. And what's the point of the ace? Right? It's a strange name, so what's the point of that? And what's the Rashi? Rashi is strange altogether. But so I'd like to suggest the point of the Nase, among others, maybe there are other points of the Nase, but one of the points of the Nase is to teach, to give Rivka more information. Okay, Rivka is the mother who has to raise these kids, and it's trying to convey to her more another piece of information which she could interpret and raise the kids with. Okay? Maybe to teach us more information also, maybe to teach Yaakov, again, not necessarily exclusively to teach Rivka, but that's part of another strange thing which happened, which Rivka has to interpret. It's clearly something which is not natural, that doesn't happen, as far as I know. And it's something which is indicating something to her. And she had to analyze it and take it apart and figure out what's the message. She had to put together these different pieces, that and the kicking and the nevuah, and she had to think them through and weave them together and make a picture of what's going on. So to suggest just what's the idea in the Medrash, okay? It's hardly in further, but just an idea of an approach, which is like this, is that you might think, one might interpret, one who realizes that these kids are being born by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, was by a Nes, she was barren. These are clearly, there's Hashgach going on here. One might try to interpret that, look, if Esau's born first, obviously Hashem wants him to be first, and he's the Bechor, right? Which is in a certain sense what Yitzchak thought. I mean, he's the Bechor. That's the way he was born. By the way, just take a step back. Obviously, halacha doesn't work that way, right? Even if you buy the biology of the one, the tube, and the first in, first out, the halacha of Bechor goes by firstborn. It doesn't go by first created. So the whole thing, right? The whole thing doesn't really work out. And I don't think that's the way they go in the tube. And the biology, I don't think is true. And anyways, was Eis Yaakov thinking that? The whole thing is, I don't think I have to, elaborate, dwell too much on the question. Okay. So the thing is like this. So again, someone might think that if these babies are born al pi hashgacha, so then presumably, if Esau is born first, then that's the divine plan, that Esau is the Bechor, and he's the one who really deserves it. But the thing is that it's not always the way things are. You can't always deduce from what's done first is what's most important and what's primary. And a very simple example is from the tube. You put two balls in a tube. Maybe you put the first one in first because that's the one you like best. But that comes out last. It's not, you can't necessarily derive importance from order. Like sometimes achron, achron, chaviv. Right? So the point is that who was created first is a muscle for saying is who is primary. In terms of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan, who is primary? Of course it was Yaakov. It's not Esau. The idea is Hashem is there's Hashgach here to bring about Am Yisrael. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's not Esau. Esau was born first. That's true. That doesn't mean he's primary. In fact, perhaps it means there's different ways to interpret, but one way is to say is that, and maybe Rabbi said something like this, I don't know, but that Yaakov was not born in first place. Yaakov managed to get the role which he did using his chachma and using his bechira and outsmarting Esav and tricking him, if you will, and stealing, selling, getting to sell the brachos and then doing the whole thing with Rivka and stealing and getting the brachos. So there's a lesson to learn is that Yaakov is a person who succeeds through working with his chachma and using his bechira properly to be able to propel himself ahead and to be able to succeed. He wasn't born into a position of Gedulah. He was born in as the second born. But he rose to the position of Bechor through his Bechira. And Esav, who was the Bechor, made stupid mistakes and sold the Bechor for a pot of lentils. So there's a lesson which you learn from Yaakov and Esav is that just because you're born first doesn't mean you're going to end up being the one to succeed. Ultimately, you could be born second that you could succeed. And the Avos are role models, and part of what we learn from the Avos is we model our lives upon the way they live their lives. And it could be the Hashgacha had it, that Esav came out first, but Yaakov was holding on to his heel, ready to get ahead. And it was basically depicting that to us, and maybe to Rivka also, is that Esav is first, but Yaakov has the capacity, to together with Ravi Avod Zoyer, there's a capacity within the plan for Yaakov, if he acts accordingly, appropriately with his chachma, to be able to rise above. And that was conveyed, that was like in the plan of the Hashgacha, is that Esav was born first, but he wasn't created first. I mean, then, in a sense, Yaakov really was primary in terms of the plan of the Hashgacha. So that's a message which I think we could take from it, from what we see about Yaakov and Esav, and the birth reflected that idea. But I'm saying that was another indication to Rivka that she could be instrumental in enabling Yaakov to pull Esav by the heel and get ahead, which he did ultimately and enabled him to get the brachos, which was so formative for the future of Klal Yisrael. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit confused because the nevuah seems to imply that these aspects of their personalities were almost predetermined.
Yeah. Good question. Yeah, good question. Yeah, okay, good question. Yeah, Lisa asked me that also. Yeah, so I think that you have to say, that's a good question. I mean, could Esav have been a tzaddik? So I think you'd have to say yes.
So right? For Rivka, as a mother, I'm just like, did she relate to Esav as, like, I don't even know who you're going to be?
Right, good question. Yeah, good question.
Or
so
did
I
she try
yeah.
to make sure or try as possible raising right. him in a way that maybe he would have become Russian?
Right. Right, so I think is you're right. Ultimately, a person has bechira. This is what I think. Okay, that ultimately a person has bechira. Esav could have been a tzaddik, the type of tzaddik. Maybe he couldn't have been Yaakov, but he could have been the type of tzaddik that Yitzchak imagined him to be. Maybe he was an Ishada, but he could use his great physical strength for a Latov. But he also had the capacity to be a great Rasha. And she, as a mother, which is I think part of the picture, which is helpful actually. She, as a mother, had to raise him to try to raise him to be a tzaddik, but to know that he had potential to be a great rasha. So the nevuah and these information that was being depicted to her was conveying to her a possible potential path, which could be realized, but not necessarily realized. And that's part of could be what her challenge was to, on the one hand, try to raise Esav properly, but at the same time to be ready. To be on guard, to see where Esav is going. And the Nevuah could be showing her what could happen. But even, like, Rebbe talks about this different times, Nevuahs aren't necessarily, they're potential paths of how the Hashgacha could unfold. But not the only path. It is the one that ended up being, you know, coming to fruition. But she, yes, I don't think it would be good for her to just, to actually raise Esav and try to throw him under the bus. I mean, later, when he became a Rasha, she did. But not that's not no way to raise a kid. Yeah, but that's part of, again, that's part of why she has to be a chachama in the area. She has to be able to work this through, and she has to be, so through these different pieces of information, she's able to become enlightened in the ways of the hashgacha, and in the proper way she should, in the day-to-day decisions that she's going to have to be involved. It's complicated. It's not so easy to raise a Yaakov and Esav. And this is why, just to tell her the crystal ball result isn't going to help her. She has to work through the sugya of Yaakov and Esav, and that's what the different pieces of information were to give her. Okay? Okay. So now, let's go back to, I guess, our original question. Okay, so one question was, why wasn't Yaakov told? Yeah. Why did Yaakov not, Yitzchak? Why did Yitzchak not know, right?
It makes sense not to share.
Oh, okay, right. So maybe you could say it's like this, is that, see, Rivka, and this maybe could help with David's question also. See, Rivka was a tzaddik bas rasha. Okay? And Yitzchak was a tzaddik ben tzaddik. And Rivka had the capacity to understand Yaakov and Esav, and to raise Yaakov and Esav, and to work with Esav, and to trick Esav. She grew up in the house of Lavan. She wasn't affected in, it didn't make her a Rasha in any way, but she understood Rishas. She had a first-hand exposure to Rishas. She grew up with it. She was from that town. She was a Tzaddik Bas Rasha. Okay? And as such, she was equipped to be able to navigate the challenges of raising Yaakov and Esav. Yitzchak was a Tzaddik Ben Tzaddik. He was an Ola Tamima. His experiences precluded him from being able to do that. Like, you see, when he found out that Esav was a Rasha, it was intolerable to him. It was like he couldn't see Esav's Rishas. And even when Esav was a Rasha, Esav tricked him. But he didn't have that part of a personality. He was the model. And again, they're different avos. The different imahos, and their role models were different types of people. There are people who are an Ola Tamima, who are totally kulo Lashem, and that was him. And he didn't have an ounce of rishus in his body, so to speak. He was, because of who he was and the nature of his sidkas, he wasn't capable of appreciating and living with a rod or an Esav. It would eat him up. He wouldn't be able to make the right decisions, and it would pain him so greatly, and he couldn't understand him. And in order to deal with the Rasha, you have to understand the Rasha. In fact, that's why there's a Rashi I found last night. It says when Yitzhak finally came to Rachel, I'm sorry, when Yaakov came to Rachel, so it says that, and this is the Gemara and the Rashi, it says, she told him, Yaakov Rachel ki achi aviyahu v'chi ben rifkahu. Okay, so Rashi says, what does that mean? It says, Midrasha im l'rama osuba gamani yachav rama. If he wants to be a Rama, I can also be a Rama. I'm also Ben Rivka, his sister. So he's saying is, I'm not that type of it. I'm not a tzaddik like Yitzhak. I'm not a tzaddik who can't deal with Lavan. Because Rachel said in the Gemara, he can't marry me. It's not going to work. He's a Rama. He's going to trick you out of me. It's not going to happen. And he said, no, it's not true. I'm not that type of it. There's a type of a tzaddik who's Achiv Ramaos. I could work with him. I'm Ben Rivka. I was raised by Rivka. Rivka grew up in the house of Lavan. Rivka understands Rishus. And I'm the son of Rivka, and I understand Rishus, and I'll be able to work with Lavan. I could. Rachel's deterring him and saying, no, you can't. He's saying, no, I'm Achiv Ramaos, and if you want to be a Kasher, I'll be a Kasher, but I'm the Ben Rivka. I'm the son of Rivka. I learned the lesson from Rivka. I know how to work with him. So the Rivka was capable of doing it, and it could be Rivka had the Nevuah. And Yaakov, and this I think Rabbi said, is Rivka had the Nevoah, and Yitzhak didn't have the Nevoah. He was a Navi. Hashem could have told Yitzhak. So Rivka interpreted it that Hashem didn't want to tell Yitzhak. If he didn't tell him, he didn't want to tell him. She got it through a roundabout method. Why didn't Hashem tell Yitzhak? Apparently it wasn't for Yitzhak. Yitzhak never knew. And he only knew it then. And he was, you know. But he wouldn't have been able to raise them. I think that's right. He wouldn't have been able to raise them. He wouldn't be able to give the brachos had he known. So the point is, there's different type of tzaddikim. There's a tzaddik ben tzaddik. There's a tzaddik ben rasha. Rivka was a tzaddik ben rasha. Now, it could be going back to the original question in terms of the tefillah. Maybe the Rashi is saying is bottom line is the who is closer to Hashem, whose tefillah is at a higher level. In a certain sense, you have to say a tzaddik ben tzaddik, because the tzaddik ben tzaddik is kula l'Hashem. The tefillah shmei tefillah is based upon the person's kirov l'makom. And the person like Yitzhak is kulo l'Hashem. He's an ola tamima. His whole life is Torah, is emes. And that Rivka was a big tzadekes. Great. But she wasn't impacted by Lavan and by Padan Aram and by Besua. But she understood them. She knew how to work with them. And to a certain degree, she was not at all a Rasha, and she was like 3 years old when she left. But she wasn't really 3 years old. She was older. And she did have that upbringing. And she didn't know Rishus. And to an extent, that type of... That did color her. That in some way, it takes a certain amount of focus away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and in the world of the practical. And of course, everyone... Not everyone could be a Yitzhak, and not everyone could be a Yaakov, and not everyone could be a Rachel Rivka. And everyone has different, you know, places in their lives. But ultimately, when it came down to the tefillah, it could be it saying is Eino Doma Tefillah Sadeh Ben Sadeh Tefillah Sadeh Ben Rasha. When it came to the Hashkacha intervening to breach the laws of nature and make her not barren and make her have a kid, the tefillah of the Tzaddik Ben Tzaddik was answered. Of course, there's different regards, and you can't measure or compare people. But in a regard, the Tzaddik Ben Tzaddik is at a higher level because there are greater focus upon truth than the Tzaddik Ben Rasha. Yeah.
He's unable to recognize
how to deal with. Right. Yes, right. I'm saying not every
tzaddik is the same. Is that because of
emotion? It's because of his nature. This is his emotions, his experiences, who he was, the nature of his perfection, the Ola Tamima.
Don't we say that Chacham was able to break through all these?
No, that's like I'm saying that there's an idea of deifying people and the idea of talking great tzaddikim. The great tzaddik has his limitations. And not every tzaddik is capable. Yitzhak's not capable of being Avram. Avram's not capable of being Yitzhak. Avram's not Moshe. And the different people have their... Not everyone could just become like a different person. There's Tzidkus is within your personality. And I think that's why we have different Avos and different Imahos and different personalities in Torah. Not every person is capable of being Avram or Yitzhak or Yaakov or David or Shlomo. We have many lessons and many role models in the Torah. because they're different types of people. Some people need to have Yitzhak as their role model. Other people need to have Yaakov and Avram, and there's different types of personalities. And you can't just expect a person, as great as they are, they can't become somebody else. They are who they are. So that was not, and Rivka, I don't know if Rivka made that judgment call on her own, but since the Nevuah never went to Yitzhak, she interpreted that that was not going to be good for the future of Kal Yisrael, for Yitzhak to be privy to that information. Yeah. Yes?
Learning the knowledge of how to deal with the Rasha turns a person's attention away from his attention.
Yes.
That's what Yaakov knew as well.
Yeah. Yes, I'm saying Yaakov was not an Ola Tamima. I'm saying it's in some regard, like in different regards, there's something greater about, like a Baal Tshuva is a Tam Chayru Pirish. There's different aspects, but in this particular regard, the focus upon the Diyas Hashem, Yitzchak was Kulo Hashem, he was an Ola Tamima, and that was what was necessary for this tefillah to be answered. But maybe there are other situations where you need a Yaakov, and maybe a tefillah in different circumstances that's better. They're different. And this is what the tefillah, that's ultimately what made Hashem answered his tefillah, because Yitzchak and Yitzchak. But don't think that means that she was a Rasha and she grew up in Yitzchak's house, in Lavan's house, and therefore she was 14 years old and she must be some sort of Rasha. She wasn't a Rasha. She was a Kulo Tzadik. Say they guess as if she left when she was 3 years old. But she doesn't mean she didn't know about that, and she didn't know who Lavan was, and she didn't understand Rishos. And Yaakov was saying, I'm also like that, Achle Beramos. I also understand that I'm Ben Rivka. I'm not Yitzchak. You might think I'm like Yitzchak. Yitzchak didn't even come down there. But that's not me. I'm Yaakov. Yeah. All right. Any questions?
Question.
Yeah. I don't know. It says a telech lidros as Hashem. Oh, love a telech. Because I think they're Doresh. I forget who said this, but it doesn't say by Yomer La Hashem, but it says Yomer Hashem La. It's saying it's like it said it to her via a navi or via Hashem Eber. And a telech lidros as Hashem. It sounds like she went somewhere. But yeah. I don't know. What was she in the via? But she's not on the list.
She knows about Esau.
She knows.
What happened,
oh. Right. Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I don't know. Good question. Yeah. All right. Yeah.